Olivia Amundson, based out of the Sioux Falls Regional Office, and I have my co-worker, Kiernan Brandt, who's based out of the Watertown Regional Office with me here today. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about calving distribution and the effects it has on herd health with Dr. Joe Armstrong of the University of Minnesota. Joe, would you like to give a brief introduction of who you are and what you do?
For sure. Thanks for having me today, Olivia. I am Dr. Joe Armstrong. I grew up in Minnesota, which is very important, much better state. And I went to vet school at the University of Minnesota, which is a much better school. And then I ended up down in Southeast Minnesota in private practice, working primarily bovine, dairy, beef, sale barn work, all of that. And now I work at the University of Minnesota as the Cattle Production Systems Extension Educator.
Okay, so we're going to talk about calving distribution and how it really has some effects on herd health as a whole. I think a lot of times when we think about calving distribution, we don't necessarily think about what it has or what it can potentially do for the overall health of our herd. And so, you know, kind of just to give a brief introduction of calving distribution and why it's so important, you know, so calving distribution are those, or well, it's the measure of the number of calves that are going to be born within a 21-day calving period. And why we break it up into 21 days is because if we think about the length of the estrus cycle of a cow, that's 21 days. So on average, we want to shoot for around a 60-day calving distribution. And that really allows for approximately 3 opportunities for our cows to become pregnant within a 60-day breeding window. Now, if we're incorporating estrus synchronization, we get an extra opportunity because we're able to kind of manipulate that cycle early on. And so we kind of allow that female to have an additional opportunity, but that's not why we're here today. We're not gonna talk about estrus synchronization, but just understanding that a 60-day breeding cycle is really based on the number of opportunities that cow has the opportunity to become bred. Traditionally, we want to see the majority of our mature cow herd calve within that first 21 days. And so benchmarks indicate about 63% of that herd should calve in the first 21 days. 87% of that herd should be calved by 42 days, and then 96% of that herd by 63 days. So that's a large majority of the herd calving within a 63-day period. And of course, there's advantages and disadvantages to that as well. And so when we think about calving within that kind of time period, especially for you, Joe, what kind of benefit do you see when working with producers that have a more consolidated calving season?
So the calving window and the calving distribution, when it's really tight, I really go back to this kind of systems approach. And what I think about is it's kind of a chicken or the egg situation. Okay, so we talk about this on the dairy side all the time, this high fertility cycle, where if you get cows pregnant on time, then they're better at getting pregnant the next time. And it's just a cycle that works that way. So the calving distribution to me is basically a chicken or the egg are the same thing. So if you take care of your cows really well, you do all these other things right, you can get healthy cows in the correct body condition, all these things, then your calving distribution tends to work out. You get all of your calves born early in the calving window because cows are ready to get pregnant, and that sets them up for the next time and they get pregnant early again. So for me, it's kind of a systems approach. There's not a real way to separate them. The calving distribution and having that tight window with everything towards the front really sets us up and is a, I don't want to call it, it's a result of herd health management through the whole year. That's what it really is. So it's one of the things I look at to say, is everything else going well? Because the calving distribution, you know, minus a problem with a bull or something like that, that's kind of a fluke or something else, is everything else going well? And if it is, then your calving distribution kind of worked itself out.
So then if we think about management and management year round, what are some of those health management strategies that we could start incorporating into our herd to ensure that we're kind of working our way towards a more defined distribution, which is then going to in turn take it or have an advantage on overall herd health?
Yeah. So the big thing is, we're talking big concepts here, right? So it's not a thing just crazy or outlandish or any new technology. These are things we've known for a while and that we really need to account for. And one of the first steps is separating your cows on age. So if you've got your older mature cows, they need to be separate from your heifers, especially if bunk space is limited. Because I think everyone's seen it. If you throw a hay ring out there and you put a big round bale of hay in there and your heifers and cows are mixed in, those heifers don't get to be around that hay ring very often. And they're always separate, pushed down the hill wherever they go. But the cows kind of guard that feed source. So separating our heifers and our cows is a big piece of that to start. And then after that, bunk space becomes a huge piece. And I like to see 2 feet per head. And that's kind of my bare minimum for bunk space on cows and heifers, 2 feet per head. And then it's a mineral program issue after that. You know, we struggle a lot of times to get mineral into these cows. Free choice mineral, it's better than no mineral, that's for sure. And it's definitely, in my opinion, better than lick tubs and better than blocks. So free choice loose mineral is probably, you know, what I see most often. What I'd love to see is that mineral force fed in a bunk, in a ration, however you get that done. It doesn't matter to me, but that would be the three things that I think about a lot: bunk space, mineral, and then separating by age.
Yeah. And I think you made a good point there, separating by age, especially when we think about heifers, feeding heifers and getting heifers bred. There's some research out there that say 3-year-olds are the only group with a majority of their calves born in that second 21-day period. And a lot of that is because they're still growing. And if we aren't paying attention to how much bunk space they potentially have or how much space they have to eat, and they're not getting those nutrient requirements that they need, we're definitely going to struggle getting those females bred back on that first cycle. So that's a really important point to make, especially when we're thinking about getting heifers rebred.
Joe, I'm just curious to hear your thoughts. I work with a couple of producer groups up here that actually push that even a little bit further, and they take that one calf out. The particular place I'm thinking of, they were having some disease problems with those younger groups of cows. And that was actually one of the ways that they were able to kind of get that resolved. In addition to, I think they ended up incorporating like some Rumensin and some other things in there, but maybe they had some more bossy cows, but they ended up making that split to where they weren't actually grouping those cows together until those females were pregnant with their third calf.
Absolutely. I like that because, yeah, if we think about who's the hardest animal to get pregnant, it's definitely not that heifer. You know, that heifer is growing, but she doesn't have the stress of also growing a calf or lactation. So really it's that first calf heifer that animal's that has one calf on the ground already. That animal is the hardest animal to get pregnant because she's got so much demand on her body. She also needs more targeted nutrition. So because she's growing a calf, she's lactating as well. There's all these things going on. So I agree. If you can separate really into three groups would be ideal, but not everyone has that space. So I'm trying to be a little realistic about it, but yeah, if I had it in an ideal world, I absolutely would separate into three groups: mature cows, my second calf heifers, and my coming heifers.
So nutrition is huge. Obviously nutrition drives reproduction. So if we are, you know, obviously maintaining a body condition score, 5, 5.5, and understanding when that cow calves, she's now lactating. And so those nutrient requirements are a lot higher then, but we're not going to get her bred back if she's not fed right and still maintaining a good, decent body condition score. Another thing that I know you've mentioned or I've seen in maybe some of your previous presentations is how, if we're defining our calving distribution, so we really, you know, we have like a 60-day or a 70-day, let's say, calving window. We're really setting ourselves up for healthy calves. And that's because we're really able to kind of target that nutrition for our females. And that's really going to play down into our calves. Can you talk a little bit about that kind of downline effect that it has as well?
Absolutely. So when we talk about bunk space and body condition and trying to keep everything stable and uniform, the big key piece to that is the uniformity. So when I come into a group and I say, I can see that everyone in that group is the same body condition or very close to the same body condition. I can make those targeted nutrition decisions to that group, and it's going to affect everybody, and it's going to be good for everybody. When we struggle and when we get variable results in some of the downstream effects is when we have really skinny cows and really fat cows and everything in between. And when we try to make nutrition decisions, our fat cows get fatter, our skinny cows stay skinny, and it doesn't matter what we do. So that's why we're looking for this uniformity, this bunk space, all of that. And the downstream effect is really what we talk about with colostrum quality and quantity. That those are the things that really, really matter. So firstly, we get better colostrum quality, better colostrum quantity for our calves when the dam is healthy. And then that affects lactation too. That lactation curve is going to be much better. There's going to be much more milk available, much higher quality milk available when that dam is taken care of. So you get more growth out of your calves too. So again, we're seeing this as a systems approach, right? So we know that the number one factor for how heavy calves are at weaning is their age. So we want everyone as close to the front of that calving window as possible in our calving distribution. But then after that, it's really about mom. What can she do for that calf? And way down at the bottom of the list in all of this is genetics. You got to be able to have the management in place so that the genetics can show their potential, because it doesn't matter how high quality genetics they are if our management is broken.
Talking about herd health, we really haven't even had or made mention of the word vaccines. I mean, does vaccines come into play when we think about maybe the herd health, or does calving distribution really kind of help maybe cut some of those vaccines out in terms of keeping our herd, healthy?
Yeah. I mean, when we talk about vaccines and this is maybe a little different to if there's people listening to this who have talked to the veterinarian before, I am looking to cut vaccines out whenever possible. There's key vaccines that need to be there. Absolutely. Vaccines are super important. But like we've talked about, when your calving distribution is tight, your calving window is tight, and everything's working well that way, that means that there's a lot of other things going right in your system. You've got a healthy herd that's uniform body condition, nutrition's on point, mineral program's on point. All of that stuff's going really well. You probably got to run in a clean operation. Everything else is going so well. So a lot of times, yeah, we start to see that we can cut some vaccines, and they still play a part because we need to be protected and they need to be there for insurance. But we can cut some vaccines out usually because we're taking care of everything else so well. And some of the vaccines that are on the market are really just tools to help us to put a Band-Aid on something until we can fix the management, which is the true root cause of some of these diseases.
And really, if we can avoid maybe some of those diseases or sicknesses in our calves, really based off of, we really set mom up for success in terms of nutrition. She's giving high quality colostrum, which in terms is giving us, a high immunity, calf that is maybe getting sick less. I mean, that's going to have effects on overall weaning weights too, which is going to have an effect on the money that we receive back when we sell those calves in whichever way we decide to sell them. So it really is a whole systems approach and has a downline effect. And it's really something that we can start looking at in terms of just how our cows are calving and when they're calving.
Well, and I think beyond even our calf health, which is obviously super important, a lot of times with these reproductive diseases that can get into our cow herd, if we're scattered out and our calving distribution is not front loaded and has a tendency to drag out towards the end there, if we end up having some kind of an outbreak, a lot of those diseases, Joe, correct me if I'm wrong here, but will present in very similar ways, making that even harder to pick up. Whereas if we have that distribution front loaded, we have 60%+ calving in that first 21 days and a large proportion front loaded, then if something like that were to pop up and we notice a few more cows straggling out towards the end of that distribution, that might give us an indicator that we might have something going on. Give us one less thing to guess at.
Absolutely. There is nothing worse than trying to diagnose an abortion issue in a herd with a calving distribution that's super wide or calves year round. It's so hard to get a hold on what's going on and to identify what the problem is, because a lot of times, just even if I know what the distribution was the year before and we're trying to match that, I can see the pattern and that'll tell me what I'm looking at for the most part. You know, am I dealing with early? Am I dealing with late? Am I dealing with a bunch of rebreeds or reheats? You know, so then I know what to look for. So yeah, I think that that's a perfect point. When we're talking about that, you know, having a tight calving window, knowing what to expect, having that consistent from year to year, any deviation from that then gives me something exactly pinpoints what I need to look for and what the problem is. And we don't have to be taking our best guess at everything. We have a lot more information then.
Yeah. And I kind of think that sets us up for another really good question that maybe some guys don't always take as seriously as they need to, but doing a breeding soundness exam on their bulls and how important that really is in terms of getting our cows pregnant and getting them pregnant timely. I mean, is there any advice you can give in terms of when guys get BSEs? Are there certain things they need to be looking for or asking for to make sure that those bulls are going to do the job that we're asking them to do?
Well, the big thing is that the Theriogenology Association changed the BSE standards pretty recently in the last couple of years. So we have new metrics, we have new ways that we're doing things and new things that we're looking at. There's been some changes to sperm morphology and things that are considered abnormal versus what we consider actually normal now. So I think that's the big thing. Are we using the updated standards is a huge deal, because they really are targeted. They have a lot of data behind them to show us not only is a bull good or bad, but is a bull capable of doing what we want it to do and getting this calving distribution right, or is he not? So there's a lot of gray area, right? There's a lot of in between this bull can get pregnant or get cows pregnant. The bull can't get pregnant. This bull can get cows pregnant and this bull can't get any cows pregnant. There's a lot of in between that. And so we're really trying to sort out the high end bulls that can really give us this tight calving distribution. And that's what we're looking for with these new standards. So that's what we really want to see. Now, all of that is a moot point if you don't take care of your bulls on the other side of things, right? They need eyes. They see heats with their eyes first. They got to be able to go and move. So they got feet and legs there too. And they can't be fat. I don't have a bigger pet peeve than fat bulls. They can't be fat. They got to be the right body condition. They're an athlete, especially if you're asking them to do a bunch of work in a pretty short period of time. They got to be ready to go. In terms of timing for that BSE, that's always tricky, right? Because you want it fairly close to breeding season, but we also want a chance to retest that bull if something's goofy on the day of, right? If it's 100 degrees out and you're testing that bull, probably shouldn't test them in the first place. You should probably wait till it's a little cooler out, but you want a chance to retest them. And it takes a while for him to make new sperm cells. So if something does happen, we're talking about a 60-day period before we're seeing new sperm cells. That's a long time. So I like to do it close enough that you have time to get another bull if you need to, and that he could get retested and still be good for that season in some way. So I like 30 to 45 days before you turn that bull out. That's my recommendation usually.
Even if a bull passes their BSE, it doesn't mean that they're going to go out and completely do the job that we're asking them. I mean, we need to make sure that we're paying attention to those bulls, because a BSE doesn't test libido. It doesn't test if a bull is going to be nice to the other bulls out in the pasture. I mean, I've been parts of train wrecks myself where, you know, these bulls have been BSE'd, but we still miss two cycles in our cows. So something to definitely always be watching for, because that right there will screw up an entire calving distribution. And then of course you have the downline effects of that as well.
Yeah. And I think before we even jump onto libido, I mean, I always just encourage guys when they have a vet out there doing BSEs, that, I mean, to get as much information, one, out of the vet, but also to be taking as much information as they can, because there's a lot of intricate parts and processes of a BSE. And chances are a vet might see them all, but he's not going to have the opportunity to look at them all the same. So if you can be, as a producer, there actively walking around, checking eyes, checking feet, checking for persistent frenulums and some of those other intricacies of the working gear going wrong, anything that we can get to give us a better idea of how that bull is going to go out and perform beyond just what it says under the microscope.
Yeah. So really, if that bull doesn't perform and you have a bunch of open cows, blame your vet, especially the one from Minnesota that works for the university.
Hey, I mean, we're not perfect. And it's a perfect point that Kiernan made. Absolutely. I'm only as good as what the producers tell me. I can't see everything. And I don't know these cattle as well. I never will as well as the producers do. So I'll take all the help I can get. I'll take anybody telling me, hey, he was lame a week ago. I need you to look at his left front foot. Absolutely. I can't see everything. A lot of times, you know, I'm very guilty of being super busy and trying to get to the next job. So absolutely, I'll take all the help I can get. Eyes, feet, body condition, anything that a producer sees, because they see them way more than I ever will. So absolutely, I'll take all the help.
Okay, so here's another thought that I don't know, I kind of found interesting on one of your presentations, and I guess it was towards the bottom, but what does calving distribution have to do with potential when we're putting, or when we're calving cows and maybe we're calving them out in a pasture setting? Do we see a difference in maybe parasite loads of these animals when they are maybe front loaded in the calving season versus those cows that are calving later in the calving season?
Yeah, it depends on what parasite we're talking about. When we're talking about things that we're talking about, like calf diseases or things like that, when we're talking about either cryptosporidium or coccidiosis, then absolutely. It makes a big difference. When we have a really strung out calving distribution, we get a lot of mixing of ages. So we've got, you know, older calves and younger calves. So we might have a day old calf in the same area as a 6 week old calf. And everything transfers older to younger. Everything. It doesn't matter what it is. It goes older to younger. So when we see those mixed groups all the time, and calves being the little petri dishes and virus parasite factories that they are, we see that what we have is a problem with the later calves in the distribution. They tend to get sick more often, and it's because we've built up these pathogens in the environment. And most notably, that does come down to the big three that cause scours, which is coronavirus, rotavirus and cryptosporidium, and then coccidiosis later in life after 3 weeks of age. So those are the things that we worry about a lot. When we mix ages, we change who gets sick and how often and how bad. And so if you are going to string it out, you really should be doing something like a Sandhills calving method kind of thing, where you're moving anybody who hasn't calved to another area so that you split our age groups up like that.
I guess what else does the guy see when you have maybe a spread out calving distribution other than just parasites and maybe more incidences of scours? I mean, on a vet standpoint, what else do you see maybe as guys are starting to like wean or precondition their calves? Are there other health related issues that you see when these calves are, you know, being brought together and maybe weaned?
Yeah, the big thing that I don't think we talk about it enough is that when we get big age ranges, we can't develop a vaccine protocol that fits all the calves. It just doesn't work. I don't want to give that 1 month old calf an injectable modified live viral vaccine. I really don't. I think it's not effective. Okay, so I should back that up. It's protective. We know it's protective, but it doesn't give us any long lasting immunity. So I want to be doing my pre-weaning shots, and I want all the calves to be 4 to 6 months of age. And I want that. But if I get strung out, then I get 6 month old calves in there with 1 month old calves. And now my vaccine protocol really doesn't fit the group. And I'm almost making two vaccine protocols if the producer is willing, for the younger calves and the older calves. It becomes so much less efficient. So for me, that's another thing that we don't talk about enough. Your vaccine protocol becomes less effective when you get less protection when you get these strung out groups.
Well, even like going back to your bunk space, you know, calves that are maybe 1 month old compared to calves that are like 4 to 6 months old, you know, that 1 month old he's going to be overtaken by some of those older calves, and really that gain isn't going to be there. He's really not even ready to be, you know, eating that kind of a ration, depending on whatever you're feeding those calves. So there's a difference in that too.
Absolutely. And I bounce back and forth between the dairy and the beef world quite a bit. And that's what I did in practice. And I like it because it gives me a chance to learn things from both sides. And we take things from the beef side and I apply them to the dairy, and I take things from the dairy and I apply it to the beef. So this two feet of bunk space for beef cows didn't come from nowhere. I mean, it came from somewhere, right? We didn't just pull that number out of nowhere. And that's the bunk space that we need for cows in the dairy. We need 2 feet per head. In a fresh cow, you know, in my ideal world, I would have 30 inches for everybody. That's what we want for fresh cows on the dairy. That would be excellent for beef cows. Because even when you do have 2 feet of bunk space for everybody, it's still tight. Everybody's got to push and shove to get up there and eat at the same time. And you're right. When we have calves that are different sizes, they can't eat. And the other thing I take from the dairy is those calves, the rumen is not ready. It's not ready. They, even when we provide grain, which is one of the main things that develops the rumen, we provide grain from day one in a dairy calf, that rumen is not ready unless they've been eating grain consistently for 5 to 6 weeks. So you're trying to wean a 1 to 2 month old calf. I don't think that rumen is ready to support it. And that's why you see this big negative energy balance post weaning, because that rumen can't support that calf's function yet. So yeah, it's a bad deal to have it strung out and have weaning these really young calves where the rumen's not ready to take over yet.
So in general, calving distribution plays a huge, huge role on overall herd health. And like I said, I just don't think we always look at it in a systems approach and kind of think about maybe some of the repercussions that come with, you know, calving over a, you know, past the 90-day calving window. And so I think you brought a lot of good information to the table. Is there anything else we missed in terms of talking about herd health and how, you know, calving distribution kind of plays a role in all of this?
Yeah, I mean, we could talk forever because it is all connected and it's all a systems. And this is one of the things that is a good measure of the output of the system, right? You got your calving distribution, you've got your pounds of calf weaned per cow exposed. Those are big kind of things that I look at as outputs of how is the whole system working. So we could talk on and on and on. I think one of the only things that we really didn't talk about is just basics of hay and how to store your hay, how to make sure you don't have as much spoilage, how you feed your hay to make sure you're as efficient as possible. How you store your hay when you cut it is a huge deal. You got to be able to access the hay that you want to feed. And so we get into discussions on a lot of farms where people are just starting up and they love stacking things front to or back to front, right? You make your first cutting, you put it in the back of the shed, then you put second cutting in front of that, third cutting in front of that. Well, then you end up feeding it in the wrong order, right? You feed third cutting first, then second, because you can't get to first cutting. It's in the back of the shed. So even just simple things like that play a huge role in all of this. Getting the right feed to the cows at the right point in gestation is as simple as stacking your hay from left to right instead of back to front. So those kind of things are, like I said, we could talk for days about this and try to incorporate all the different pieces of the system, but those are the things you need to talk to your veterinarian about and your nutritionist about and your extension educators about, especially the ones at SDSU, because all joking aside, these guys are pretty good.
Yeah, well, we enjoy Joe as well, even though he's really hard on us. He really is. You know, he pushes us to be better. I don't know, Kiernan, do you have any last questions or thoughts?
Oh, I figured we'd close with just kind of highlighting on something that Joe said earlier. I think it's really important to just to understand the context of what we're talking about. For me, I love to talk genetics. I love to help guys pick bulls. I love the nutrition side of things. And I love to help guys balance rations and figure out how to do it cheap and effective. But to me, those are things that I consider relative growth. Things like calving distribution are foundational growth. And we really can't even begin to tap into things like understanding the genetic potential of our animals and optimizing rations, especially like some of these targeted feeding strategies based on when we're cutting and storing our hay, if we're not already doing
foundational things like front loading our calving distribution right to understand where we're at when we're already doing these basic things correctly.
Yeah, and honestly, it might be something that we have Joe on again for an additional podcast to kind of continue the conversation on, you know, the importance of calving distribution and some of these different system pieces that all kind of make that work. So other than that, Joe, we thank you so much for being with us this morning. And for all of our listeners, thank you for tuning in, and we will catch you on the next one.